I'm standing with Nick English. Nick, what does he do for a job?
Well, I do most of it, unlike my brother, but we make watches.
Tell me a bit about the brand Remel.
Actually, it's just been over 10 years now. So over 10 years, Giles and I, historically, well, massively into all things mechanical from our father, spent loads of time in the workshop with him as kids, and through old aeroplanes, old cars, old clocks, became passionate about watches, and our father collected watches, so got into it from there, really.
Tell me about the name, because there's kind of an interesting story about where the name came about.
Yeah, well, there's amazing history of British watchmaking, clearly. I mean, some of the best innovations came from UK, but Giles and I didn't, when we started the brand, want to buy an existing brand or a brand that had been defunct for a number of years. So we wanted to call it something from scratch, and it came down to a flying trip Giles and I were doing many years, but actually back in 97, I think it was, and we had to force land in a French farmer's field in an old German biplane, a 1930s biplane, and the guy who came to help us, because it gets quite bureaucratic landing in a French field, it was a chap called Antoine Bremont, and we stayed in for 2 or 3 days, and he had an old workshop just like our father, and our father had died in a plane crash 2 years earlier, so it all meant quite a lot to us, and he had old Merlin engines. He fought for the Free French during the Second World War, and amazing, amazing guy, and his name was Bremont, so it came from there.
Wow, he inspired you. Does he know about all of this? Was he around?
He's around for 2 years after that. Oh. So he was 78 years old when we met him, and an amazing guy. So he knew we were getting into it. But
one thing I've noticed, and one thing that kind of drew me to what you guys do, and I actually, you know, it's from conversations where I'm saying, I really need to come and talk to you because you're doing some really amazing stuff and I want it to be even more amazing. Can I come and speak with you? And you're like, oh, we're quite busy selling watches around the world, but yeah, let's do something. And the more I learn, the more I kind of fall in love with the stories that are connected. And when I find one story, it leads me to another. And how important is this embedding of stories, very authentic happenings that have happened to you, your family, the brand, stories about what goes on in the workshops, who you get involved, why passion is so important. I mean, was this something you've always been into?
I think it is. I think, as you're saying, most things in life have a story attached to them. We're talking earlier, it can be a pair of jeans, it can be a car your father drove many, many years ago, indeed a wristwatch. And I think that, for Giles and I, is a very important part of whatever we do. I think also, every year we have a great excuse to go off and fuel some of our passions, which is slightly, you know, off centre for Bremel. So, you know, the year before last, it was building parts with HMS Victory that was certified by the Royal Navy, being at the Battle of Trafalgar. You know, those parts. And this year it's working with the Co-Breakers at Bletchley Park. And again, that's a big passion of Giles and I. You know, and watches, you know, most of them around with three hands. And it's quite nice to do something where there is a story attached. And it's amazing when you delve into one of these little areas, you like Bletchley, you realise how many people are actually passionate about it.
And it's quite incredible to actually be effectively embedding a piece of all these other incredible objects within your workmanship, within these watches themselves, with Bletchley Park. There's a piece of the Enigma in there, isn't
there? We don't build every watch like this. We do one fun sort of limited edition a year, and we just think, actually, why not? It's a great way to explore. But this particular watch has original wood from Hut 6, where Welshman and the Turins and the Tommy Flowers of this world were, you know, the original Co-Breakers. They wore these floorboards, so that's been given to us by Bletchley Park. We had some original of the printout paper from the Hollerith machines, which is like the first databasing of the Enigma messages. And then we got some original parts of Enigma machine, which are integrated into the movement of the watch. But what's lovely about this whole project is, you know, a big chunk of the proceeds are going back to restoring the huts themselves, which is fantastic.
And it's such a great, you know, success story when you think about how Bletchley Park has, you know, is still.
You're passionate about it.
I have been for a long time. It seems so natural to me that I think I even suggested it a couple of times, and then I had no idea that you were doing it and it was happening, and I just thought, wow, it is a beautiful tie-in. I look at what it is you do, and I don't know who is responsible initially for the design, whether it be the special editions, like you say, or the timepieces I have seen out there in the physical world. So they're outside of fashion. They seem to be something that aren't constrained. I see a lot of watches that cost a bit of money, and they look like there's an awful lot of workmanship and some amazing materials going in, but I look at them and think, I probably won't like this in 5 years' time. How do you get by that?
Well, I think it's one of our jars. Well, when we started, we wanted to produce a watch which, within that price point, you couldn't buy a better watch in that price. So that was very important for us. Came from an engineering background. It was about producing a watch which beautifully engineered. So it wasn't about bling. It wasn't about ounces of gold and carats and gems and that sort of thing. It was about, I could pick up this watch and, God, it feels nice to move and to turn and to hold. But also a watch that, you know, is fairly, without trying to sound corny, fairly timeless. But you could pick it up in 20 years' time and say, actually, that wasn't, say, 2013. And that's very important. But, you know, when you, and I think that's sort of slight testament to the sort of guys who are buying the watches. So that's, you know, there, it might be a guy in his 20s who's heard about the brand, but it just as likely to be someone in their 60s who's very happy at wearing it at a business meeting. And for us, that's really, really important. And you want to produce something that, in that respect, you can use down the line.
So what kind of people are buying Bremont? Because it's, I mean, more accessible than I thought, because you are a luxury brand.
Yeah.
What does luxury cost?
Luxury costs very little. Like, do you know that we vary? But you know, our entry price point is just late, sort of, I think £2,700 or something, up to, obviously we do clocks that go for £200,000, so up to limited editions weigh me maybe sort of £20,000. But the, you know, the most range, probably the average price point for the normal range is probably about £4,000. So compared to a lot of other watch brands out there now, which prices have gone up, then it's very, very, you know, sensible.
It's weird how, you know, I the most expensive kind of newish thing I bought was, I think, £8,000. It was actually not new, a car.
Yeah.
And
you wrote it off?
No, I didn't. Oh, but I looked at how much it was. Yeah, we've still got it in the household. No, that was a different one. That was a lot cheaper, believe it or not. Still more painful. Don't remind me of these things. But the, like a Suzuki Swift, and I just looked at how much it was worth the other day, and I've lost way more than the price of a watch.
You look at, you know, we're all happy
one of your watches.
We're all happy to go out and buy an iPad or an iPhone or whatever it may be. Dump £500, and everyone expects to buy a new one in 12 months' time, or. Or you've dropped it in the bath or something. With a watch, you know, there's no reason like that watch should not be working in 80, 100 years' time. If you look at after it, it's like an old car, an old aircraft. You know, you see some of these amazing Bentleys that are around from the 1920s. And it's because they're looked after, the mechanical devices.
That's nothing, because people have got a relationship with it, though. It is a thing of beauty. Everything now seems to be so disposable.
But there's nothing. That's the whole point. This is not disposable, and every single part on that watch can be replaced internally, externally. So you bring it back for a service, it comes back, and it's effectively a brand new watch because we've taken everything apart. We've, you know, put a new bezel on it. It's just, you know, it's quite special, and that's what people love, I think, nowadays. And Quartz watches have been out there for a long time. I mean, a third of our business is military, delivering to a lot of the US market and a lot of the UK market and elsewhere, Australia and Israel and places like this. And it's really important that, you know, to these guys, they're in a cockpit, you know, they're looking at, they've just put their iPhone away in the locker, they get to their cockpit of their aircraft, they're looking at the head-up display, which has the time on it, has the time of the trip, it has all the information they need without having to look at their watch most of the time. But they still want a watch, but they don't necessarily want a Quartz watch anymore. They're more appreciative of what goes into, you know, these guys, there's probably four things in their lives that mean anything to them. It's probably cars, watches, planes, and probably women. Don't know which particular order. And watches become a bigger part. So it's, you know.
And these are people whose life is dependent on that workmanship working. Because they're in an aircraft, which is an incredible machinery. They can see the inside and outside
of. It's their brand. You know, these guys on an aircraft carrier, same haircut, same suit, same boots, flying the same airplane, and their watch means a huge amount. You may have four or five squadrons on a Hornet squadrons on an aircraft carrier. This is their tag. It's not a tattoo, it's a watch, and it's very important to them. And it says a lot about the person. I think you can tell a lot about a person by the watch they're wearing. You know, if you're seeing a big, very blingy watch, it's a certain person, isn't it? Then if you see someone with a G-Shock, it might mean they're really outdoorsy and
there's little terrorist watches.
Oh yeah, those ones you mentioned earlier on. Yeah.
They were quite interesting. Yeah, there is a watch that the American Secret Service will look out for to decide whether or not you are a terrorist. It's a Casio.
It's not a Bremer. I tell you that much. It's digital. It's not digital.
It's funny because I have a fascination with things that will potentially outlive me, because I do think we live in a disposable society. I even wrote a piece on my blog, I think it was last year now, talking about one of the things that I would like to do this year is, when I'm making any big purchases, I want to know that there is an incredible amount of love that's gone into the creation of this object. People believe in what they're doing, they're authentic about what they're doing, they're passionate about what they're doing, and that I can pass that on afterwards. This isn't destined for landfill. It's almost impossible when it comes to the tools for my job.
That's difficult. This is the thing. We're surrounded by disposable stuff, as you said earlier. Everything we touch pretty much is disposable. The bags we use, the shoes, I mean, it's all going to go in, as you said, the landfill. But then when you do consciously buy something which is perhaps outside of work, it's quite nice to have something like your motorbike you're telling me about earlier on.
Yeah.
It's quite nice that actually your son might want to drive that in 20 years' time or 15 years' time or something. And if you let him.
Yeah, that's a good point. They're dangerous things.
They're dangerous things. But, you know, but that possibility's there, or they can tinker with it later on. I think for us, you know, I've still got watches our father wore. We fly airplanes we built with our father. And this sort of thing is huge. And there's a huge amount of, you know, I'm taking his grandchildren, my children, and the airplane he built. And it's an experience he would have just died to have seen, you know, loved to have seen. And it was, quite special. I think also you hit an age, don't you? You get to a stage, it might be just because we've just hit our 40s, but you know, you get to a stage and you do start appreciating things a lot more.
Definitely. And I'm glad that I can see that for what it is. And and it's funny because I talk a lot about, you know, I've got, you know, a camera that I wear around my neck, which is the world's first automatic, you know, automated wearable. You know, I'm saturated at the moment with wearable technology, and yet you are making some of the original wearable technology.
Exactly the whole point
of a wristwatch, this kind of timepiece, was so it could be worn and not have to.
And if you think about it, there's you've got a minor miracle happening on your wrist with a mechanical watch. There's 86,400 seconds odd in the day, and you're producing something. When it leaves our workshop here in Henley, you'll calibrate them, you'll regulate them to their, you know, 2 or 3 seconds fast today. Nobody wants a watch that's slow. You know, over time, a mainspring over sort of 5-6 years may gradually weaken, and you have to, you know, get it servicing. But it's or not, you know, they can go on for a long, long time. But you're calibrating something 2 seconds, 3 seconds within, you know, 86,000, and that's what's special. And you're bashing this thing around. It's not like it's sitting on a wall in your kitchen or in your study, tick-tocking away on a. But people are putting these things through. They're on the worst thing you can put. You need a watch for is a bicycle, believe it or not, because you're going over every single, you know, if it's feeling, there's very little suspension in the bicycle, your watch is feeling everything.
Like a jackhammer.
It is, like a jackhammer. Yeah. And this is why when we had watches with, you know, Charlie and Ewan doing the long way round, and it was really good test. It was a really good test. We learned a huge amount
I didn't know they wore watches.
That was back in 2006 or so, a long time ago.
Early days.
But they're when we're testing initial.
They still work in those watches.
Still wearing them, so it's a good start. And we'd still do a huge amount with Charlie. So it's
I sat on his bike, the broken one.
The broken
BMW. Yeah, is it a bike show?
The one that
I had loads of photos on that. I love that trip.
But they're good guys, aren't they? Yeah. They just seem to
unbelievably.
But that's another thing, it's a proper kit. That bike will be around forever now. Yeah. Not just because it's done that, but these BMWs will be around forever because they're brilliantly
stories
made.
Of things and things with stories.
I know, and again, it's the story. It's the story it comes back to, doesn't it?
So. I love it. Thank you very much, and thanks for doing what you're doing and being so passionate about it. I guess you wouldn't go to work if you weren't.
Well, I mean, same about you. I mean, you know, your passion, you guys, you know, when you're doing what you're doing, is phenomenal. But
I
love it. We can only learn from the likes of you.
Oh,
Christian, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Cheers,
Ami.